So you mentioned Ann Partridge at your place, and she's really had a leadership role in looking at the issue of younger women. Maybe you can comment a little bit on some of the important issues that come up in terms of fertility, getting pregnant, and even treating pregnant patients.
So those are all very compelling stories, obviously, when younger women have breast cancer. The first thing to say is that as time goes by, I think we recognize more and more that, you know, breast cancer outcomes are really driven more by biology than by age. And so for younger women, the most important thing is to get a good grasp on the biology of the tumor, to clarify the HER2 status, and to clarify the Oncotype DX recurrence score if appropriate, and to treat it as you would in general for an older woman, with the caveat that ovarian suppression may be important for higher risk cases, and obviously that brings with it more side effects in younger women. The other caveat is that chemotherapy, endocrine therapies, all have implications for fertility and reproductive plans in these younger women. Because of the demographics of breast cancer, we start screening mammography in the U.S. at around age 40. We see a lot of women who are in their 40s when they're diagnosed, and while they are premenopausal, many of them will have finished childbearing. So the issues of treating a 44-year-old woman are different from treating a 29-year-old woman or a 32-year-old woman who might still be very much anticipating childbearing. Good news on that front is we've learned a couple of things in their management that's helpful. One of them is that the assisted reproductive technology continues to get better. And so at our center, we work very closely with the OBGYN service at Brigham and Women's Hospital, which has really been super supportive of our patients. And a lot of women will engage in vitro fertilization strategies or other assisted reproduction strategies with good success at preserving fertility. The other thing we've learned in recent years is that actually giving ovarian suppression during chemotherapy, so using GnRH agonist treatments like leuprolide or gozarelin during chemo to suppress ovarian function as the patient gets chemotherapy, helps preserve ovarian function down the road. And there have now been multiple randomized trials that if you shut down ovarian function during chemo, the patient is more likely to recover ovarian function after chemotherapy and also be more able to conceive and bear a child afterwards.
Now, when you do that, will you do that on any woman or you look at the ER status?
The literature is mostly built around ER-negative cancers because when they were doing these studies, there were hypothetical concerns about whether the ovarian suppression might in some way affect the longer-term outcomes. Since we now think about ovarian suppression as part of the treatment for ER-positive breast cancer, especially in women getting chemo, I don't really worry about that so much, and I will do it in ER-negative or in ER-positive cancers in women.
What about ova preservation?
So ovopreservation, as opposed to fertilized embryo preservation, is more technically feasible than it was a few years ago, but still in general has a lower yield than preserving the fertilized embryo. So now I'm not an expert in this, but in lay terms, you're essentially talking about freezing eggs versus freezing fertilized eggs. And the big difference is whether you've aligned a sperm donor to do the in vitro fertilization part before the embryo or oocyte is frozen. Up until very recently, it was really hard to unfreeze unfertilized eggs and have a viable conception and then implantation afterwards. The technology is getting better. Centers have more experience with it. And so that is an option for women who don't have a sperm donor accessible to them or don't want to use sperm banking resources.
What about chemotherapy in terms of reducing or eliminating fertility? How much variation is there between the different kinds of chemotherapy?
There's a little bit of variation. So the alkylator type chemotherapies, drugs like cyclophosphamide, are the most likely to induce menopause or damage ovarian reserve. After that, anthracycline-based chemotherapy and then taxane-based chemotherapy can each have a role. So these issues sometimes arise because occasionally we have the opportunity to tailor the chemotherapy regimen. So you and I have talked in the past about our regimen, for instance, for stage 1 HER2-positive breast cancers, where we are often giving paclitaxel chemotherapy with trastuzumab, but not giving anthracyclines or alkylating chemotherapy. chemotherapy. If a woman wishes to preserve fertility, that's an appealing option if it's an appropriate treatment. That's still a minority of most patients who are younger and will get chemotherapy. For those women, alkylator-based regimens are still the standard of care, regimens like TC or AC followed by T. Occasionally, we will think about omitting the anthracycline if we want to try and do a little bit less damage to ovarian function. And that's, again, a highly individualized discussion.